This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. Hey, how do we prepare for the future? Well, in this episode, insights from the perspective of a shop owner, a technician, instructor, COO, and a trainer. You know, times have changed, so how do we get the younger generation passionate about our industry and our high-tech vehicles? What does the future of ADAS and electric vehicles mean to the aftermarket? Hey, you're going to love this episode from the Aftermarket Radio Network. It's Carm Capriotto. Hey, listen to learn just one thing and use it to advance yourself and the aftermarket into the future. Hey, thanks to our partner Shopware for providing this episode. You know, joking aside, it's not just the kids who are addicted to their phones. We buy food and almost everything else with just a few clicks. So why not auto repair? Shopware's digital repair order makes it easy for customers to click yes. Talk to my friends over there on the web at GetShopware.com. Sam Craven is with us, shop owner, the Garage Eastie in Houston, Texas. Hey, Sam.
Hey, Carl.
Jake Sorensen, the 2019 Napa ASE Technician of the Year, works at McNeil's Auto Care, Sandy, Utah, works for a multi-shop operator, and he helped create the Napa Apprentice Program. Hello, Jake.
Hey, Carm, how's it going?
Good. Now, I want you to break the code. We have a shop owner, we have a technician, and we have a trainer, Bill Weaver, Napa trainer, 30 years in the business, 11 years as an auto instructor, ASE certified, Master Tech A9, L123, MIL 2, MIL 6. Hello, Bill.
Hey, everybody. Thanks, Carm, for having us on.
I'm glad to have you here, man, because we're going to talk about how we should prepare for the future. Interesting. Shop owner, technician, trainer, general manager, chief operating officer at GNC Tire, Jack Curran, out of Chantilly, Manassas, Virginia, multi-shop owner. Hey, Jack.
Hello. Good to be here again.
Thank you, man. And John Gardner, automotive instructor, Chipola College, Mariana, Florida. I said Marinara, like I'm Italian, like I know what that is, right?
It's all good.
Mariana, Florida, and host of Tech Garage, returning for season 9, you told me.
Woohoo! Yeah, hey guys, great to be here. Look forward to this. This is going to be awesome.
Hosted by John and Josh Ellis on the Discovery Motor Trend Network. We interviewed a long time ago, John. Thanks for coming on way back in the day. I always call something at least 3 or 4 years ago, back in the day. We've been doing this for 7 years. Thought about you as an instructor and someone who's, you know, well known to the industry. So thank you all for being here. John, I want to go to you first. There's no doubt that if we're going to prepare for the future, because of the fact that you're an instructor, Jake, you know what apprenticing is. Bill, you're speaking and training to technicians. There's no doubt that the theme of training is going to be prevalent here, no doubt. But John, we talk about it too much on my podcast and I think throughout the industry about raising our own techs.
Yeah, I don't see any other way around it. I mean, the guys today, the students today, they're brilliant. They really are. I mean, you know, people like to say, well, it's a different generation. This is rough. It's not going to work. It's all really false information. They're brilliant. They're just a little different. I mean, you know, a prime example, and I say this all the time, I mean, we have an older student, you know, maybe somebody my age, and then we have some of these new guys, and they just go about the lab sheets a little different. Maybe they'll take it out. The new guy will do all his lab sheets on one car. The old guy, he'll do them one at a time and then get them done. So different, they get them done at the same time, different, but you know, you just have to get them into the shop. We can give them so much in the schools. I'm fortunate to work with a ton of schools and a ton of shops and a ton of shop owners. And we have to be massively flexible. I mean, the instructors have to change. I get it. I know what you guys are up against. We go out, we do shop visits all the time, but you're going to have to work with us, with the schools and the students. They're going to have to get out there. They're going to have to mentor with you. You're going to have to start them on a low rate of pay. You're going to have to start them on a salary instead of flat rate and just bring them along. And you know, the schools, they'll give them the knowledge. It'll be in the back of their heads. But as far as getting out there and mentoring them, I totally believe in that. And, you know, it's a paradigm shift to what it used to be. I mean, we used to just send them out there. And remember, guys, I mean, they're not drivability techs. They're entry-level technicians. I mean, that's it. and that's what you're going to get. I mean, at 1,800 hours, I wish it was shorter and we could kind of get some more mentorship and on-the-job training. We're trying to do that in the state of Florida now. But I believe they're going to have to work with you guys, and I believe they're going to have to work with you guys throughout the whole schooling process if you really want to bring in a tech and make them successful.
So impressed, John. I have never gotten up on my soapbox more in the last year, I would say. We've had Jake on a bunch of times talking about this, the power and the value. And frankly, by being involved in education, I'm on an advisory panel because my influence and the things that I see in the industry bring them a really different perspective. But I'm also have my ear to the grind as to what they're doing. And John, you in your talking points, you said something so important about implementing the training programs and the things that we're doing today in the shops into the college. We have to go to the instructors and say, hey, why aren't you teaching this stuff?
To butt in, I really, the other thing I'll take away from his is he said something about having an entry-level tech. And that is so important to understand that they are not drivability techs when we get them. And we spend so much time because of the requirements of curriculum on your side to get them, this is a camshaft, we're trying to show them transmissions, we're trying to show them everything at one time. Whereas I'm sure the shop owner will speak to this, I need a guy who can safely lift a car, do a brake inspection, not knock a finger off using the tire machine, and I can get him to where he can make some of the money you guys were talking about. Now I can get the next level employee to mentor him to bring him to the next task.
Yeah, no doubt. And Jake, I mean, the stuff you guys are doing with NAPA, I mean, you know, I'm not very familiar with it, but if you go to a school and they're not receptive to manufacturer-sponsored programs, to manufacturer's curriculum, I know Ford's doing some CAP stuff now, and they're trying to get it out. It's shifting. I mean, the T10 program, the ASAP program, the NAPA, everybody, you know, it was all proprietary information where you had to be in that click to be able to get that information. And now we're seeing a change. We're seeing these manufacturers starting to scramble now, and they're coming over to the school. And if the instructor's not receptive or you know, wants to accept that, then move on. Find another school. I mean, the instructor have to change. They have to be flexible. I mean, they can't just keep doing what we're doing too. So times changed on both ends.
I'm blown away by that statement, John, because I've heard it a dozen times in the last year. If you're involved in the schools and you know you have a seminar coming from any of the manufacturers, to your point, John, and you're not inviting the instructors, because it's the instructors that also need to go to those training classes. And then why not take maybe an abridged version of any of the manufacturer's programs right to the school? Interrupt the lab and just go in and do a couple of hours for their lab. You think they may have just learned something that keeps them engaged in wanting to go ahead and have this to be a solid career?
Please do. I mean, come on. If they don't have an open door policy, then they're doing something at the school they shouldn't be doing. I mean, it's the bottom line. I mean, come on, grab everybody out of the shop, sit down. You want to go for 30 minutes, 45 minutes, 2 hours. I mean, you got to remember, you got an attention span of about 10 minutes. You know, we shuck and move. And, you know, just like the TV show, we got to move fast because you watch the analytics crash and burn. But if you got something interesting to say, or even you want to use the shop and use some cars, get over to the tech school and do it. First of all, they don't want to listen to me every single day. It's 1,800 hours. So when somebody else comes in, they get that huge credibility that you know, and you're a hero. When you walk in there, you're coming in there with a Superman cape on as far as they're concerned, because you're out there doing it. So when you walk in there, I mean, they are glued to you. I mean, you got an hour in any school to give that abridged version, what you said, and just at least come in and tell them what do you expect when they get out there, because half of them don't even know that.
Wow. Jake, are you hearing anything that's foreign to you?
No, I wanted to add on to that I think that's perfect. You need to get into these tech schools and build a relationship. You know, when we started doing the apprenticing here, we had a hard time finding the right candidates. You know, we had to put out ads. We had to interview all these people really looking hard. We built a relationship with the local community college that has a tech program. And as soon as we got the first student from there into our apprenticeship, we have a line of people waiting to get in now. And, you know, we can ask them about the person that they're in class with and, you know, what their aptitude is, what their attitude is. We can wait and see and get the right applicants every time. So that's really opened the floodgates for us as far as applicants go, just building that relationship with the schools.
Well, you're envious to the rest of the world who says, I can't find anybody for an apprentice program, so I won't do one.
Yeah. You need to start making those relationships, get out there and talk to people, you know, go to the schools. The great thing is the schools are built to give these people the foundation, the technical knowledge that they need. The one thing that they're lacking on, at least the ones that we've worked with, is the hands-on experience. You know, for example, when I talk to the students that have come to us, I'll ask them, well, how much have you worked on a car in class? And they say, well, every Friday we have a hands-on day and somebody will bring in mom's car that needs spark plugs and five of us put the spark plugs in that car. You know, in the apprenticeship, they're getting more experience in that in a week than they would get 2 years in the program. But we aren't good at teaching them the technical background and the base knowledge that they need. So we really need to work together, let the schools do what they do best, and then shops need to step it up and do well at teaching the hands-on portion of these things and the practical, you know, taking that technical information and showing them how they're going to use it every day.
So are you basically saying, and John, this question is to you or Bill, it's more theory that you're teaching, John?
Yeah, I mean, we're shifting. I'll let Bill speak in a second, but you know, we're shifting. We're shifting. The advisory board, like Jake, like you said, is really dictating where we're going, and they want the hands-on. So, you know, and unfortunately, some schools, you know, we have 14, 15 cars. Some schools have one car, and some schools have to do the mom and pop spark plugs on Friday, you know, and that's sad, you know, but we're trying to turn more wrenches. We're trying to at least get you that entry-level tech where, you know, we know the hands-on ability. And one of the most important things you touched on, and I'll probably get fired for this, but it's still the automotive industry. I mean, like you said, that relationship with those students, talk to them about the other guys. I mean, you don't have to call HR over here. I mean, we'll tell you if this kid comes to school or not, that's what he's going to do for you. So, I mean, if you have that relationship with that school or that instructor, even those kids coming over, the good ones, we'll let you know really quick who's successful and who's not as far as, you know, the ethics are concerned. I mean, turning wrenches is turning wrenches. I mean, you know, we have some kids in here that just can't turn wrenches, and I'll let you know that, but that's the minority. That's not very many of them. They're pretty good with their hands once we get turning those wrenches, but we're trying to shift, Carm. We're trying to shift guys to turning more wrenches because that's what the industry dictates exactly. But yes, it is a ton of theory. I mean, 1,800 hours is a long time for a training course. I wish we could, the future needs to design that relationship between your program and our program to where they're actually getting those clock hours by us splitting that guy or student or girl or whoever it is, splitting that. And that would be a perfect, perfect scenario.
Yeah, to add on that, if we could come up with a way to get the apprentice program to where the school could get them into a garage and we could get some real world experience that would allow that student to come back to the instructor with some questions. So they could start forming. We've spent way too much time trying to teach people what to think instead of how to think. And some of you guys, and I read through all our talking points, and I was just amazed how similar all of it is. Now, problem with what I do is we travel to a different place all the time. It might be a hotel, it might be a tech school, it might be the back of a parts store. So the hands-on experience, I just did a turbo class and I took a ton of turbos that are already apart just to pass the pieces around because of the limited space and time that I have to get it. Because the other thing that our industry needs to realize, mechanics are almost always going to be tactile learners. It's the touching part and the muscle memory. Even if it comes to the high-tech stuff that I do, the reflashing, the reprogramming part of it, it all goes over memory of buttonology or whatever. So getting them to get in the field, go back and get the background, answer a couple questions, get back in the field, go back and get some more of that background, that marriage is where we really need to go. And everybody with their mentorship that we've been talking about, I think that's the key to it. But not only at the shop level, but we've got to work with our local instructors to get that feeder crop and our tire stores and our entry level guys to the point where we have that relationship that you guys spoke about. And let's face it, some people in automotive programs are not there to be in the automotive program, and being able to have that relationship to weed them out and not have to go through so many. One quick story I'll tell you, one of the first tasks that all my apprentice gets is to clean the bathroom. And I tell them right up in front, listen, I know it's not degrading. If you can't clean the bathroom, I can't give you a $70,000 car to change the oil on. If I have to tell you to move the garbage can to mop under it, this is all simple stuff. But I go back to how I learned, and I was grateful for the opportunity. And I know kids are a little bit different now, but those values is what it takes for us to be successful in our industry. And if we don't put that foundation underneath their house, you can't build on sand. We have to have a foundation before we put up landscaping, before we decide on the roof. We got to give them those cores. Can you lift a car? Can you fix a tire? Can you inspect brakes? Can you be safe and have integrity?
mop the bathroom floor day one. If you go to a shop and you're not willing to do that, you're in the wrong program. That's so funny that you say that, because that's part of our day one speech. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, you're an employee. This is whatever that shop wants you to do. You really need to do it. You're an entry level tech. It should be like a doctor. It's 2 years of internship, at least a year. Let's go back to a year. You better be there for the right reason to learn that second year, not to make money, not to turn 50 hours, to go in there and just have a positive attitude, take the minimum wage, and it's another year of schooling.
Hey, we all have bad days when we just want to turn to someone and ask, how the heck do I fix this? When that happens to you on the business side, which may not be your strong suit, you want someone quick and you want them to be clear. That's exactly what Dan Groen from Detroit Garage found when he peppered the folks at Shopware with questions about how to make the most of its shop management system. As he puts it, they continually solve the curveballs we throw at them. With 7 shops, Dan jokes that he knows he's a demanding client, but that's the sign of a guy committed to his business. Even better, the Shopware support team met every challenge with, in Dan's words, impressive capabilities and vigor. No complaints, no hassles, just a commitment to help Dan through his day. As Dan says, we make each other stronger. Now that's a partnership that works. It's time. Get Shopware.com. Well, this has been a great perspective so far. I'm fascinated. I'm taking so many notes that I actually, maybe I can ask some questions on some follow-ups near the end. But I want to get over to the management side with Sam and Jack. Now, Jack, I know you care about bringing that younger generation up. So this discussion has really probably landed right in your lap.
It certainly has. It's hard for us, especially in the DC metro area, to find the younger generation who wants to work on cars. In this particular area, we're in the richest part of the nation, and kids don't need to work. So when I was coming up through high school, I wanted to work. Went to the local auto shop and got a job, and I kind of liked it. But the younger generation around here aren't required to work. They go to college, everything's paid for, the annual household income is just ridiculous. So it's harder for me to find the younger generation who wants to be a technician. I think our local VoTech school is aeronautical engineering, not auto tech. So that's what we have to combat in our particular region. I would be more than happy to accept students from those schools and give them time in my shop. So that way I can vet them, give them time with the cars, let them see what the real world looks like, and give them the opportunity to see what it really looks like in the shop.
So to Bill's point, you have no feeder crop to pull from.
I don't. I have to treat my younger generation like gold. I just started an apprenticeship program. We have one that's getting ready to graduate. He already has a toolbox and tools. But to incentivize the right person coming in, by the end of the apprenticeship program, we want to give them a toolbox and tools. So that way they don't have to go out and pay for it. They don't have to, you know, worry about spending, you know, $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 right out of the gate. It's already theirs. That way, when they graduate the program, they have something that they can just go out and make money with. They're not going to be the highest paid technician, but they at least get to start somewhere.
Can you recruit people from out there somewhere, Oklahoma, and just say, hey, come to Washington. It's a great place.
Funny enough, I joked with Greg, the owner, about buying a townhouse to put people in. Because we are in the richest part of the nation, housing is expensive. A single bedroom apartment, I think, is like $1,300 or $1,400 a month. So it gets real tough to get the younger generation who can live on their own, do things on their own without having 5 or 6 roommates. You know, I've thought about it because then I could pull from the nation. They wouldn't have to worry so much about rent. They could pay me rent. They could, you know, be an apprentice. They could go off and learn great things. But I think housing, you know, being able to afford being a technician in this area is the tough part.
Sam, you're listening to these trainer guys. You have a bone to pick with them, or are they right on?
So I have a unique perspective here in that I'm very new to the industry. I've only had my shop about 18 months. actually, until 3 weeks ago, haven't even encountered anyone who's going through a trade program. But we just hired someone who's at the school, actually just up the road, learning how to tune engines. He's coming in, and like you guys are saying, he's starting at the bottom. We told him, like, you very well may know how to do oil changes and brakes and things like that, but we don't know that, and you're still in school. So he's cleaning the shop, he's cleaning cars, he's running errands, things like that. My perspective around this is mostly the challenges that I've faced in the last 18 months with a business that's been growing very, very quickly. We went from just being open to having four technicians and needing a fifth in 18 months. And the biggest challenge that I have faced is people, highly qualified people. You know, I know very little about kind of the vocational and the training side of this. I don't know if numbers are up or down as far as people who are entering those types of schools. But my biggest concern is, how do we get people interested in this stuff? Ever since I was like a child, I've always loved cars. My business before this was a real estate investment business that I sold. But I basically went and got a college degree because I love cars. And I went and worked on professional race teams as mechanics when I was in college. That love of cars never went away, even as I was building my other business. And that's why I found myself back in this industry. And I know why I love cars, but how do we get the next generation realize that you can follow a passion about cars? Number one, get them passionate about cars. Number two, that if they follow that passion about cars and they dedicate themselves to the process, that you can come out and you can make a lot of money. And you don't have to go in debt up to your eyeballs and hope the government pays you off your student loan in order to build a wonderful life. I mean, I have technicians working for me that are well into the six figures of what they're making. And you can do that. You can dedicate yourself to the process, and you can be doing that in 5 to 10 years. And there's not many college degrees that'll give people that type of opportunity. Yeah, my perspective isn't finding people, is the fact that I realistically could probably be 40% larger than I am now if I had extremely talented people that, you know, that fit our culture really well. I guess it's more of kind of a question than a statement, but I'd be interested to hear kind of what you guys are experiencing there. It's like, how do we get people to fall in love with the process of cars and the process of repairing them and that kind of stuff?
I'm burning to ask John this question. John, are the students that are in the school right now, do they love cars? I mean, that was one of Sam's big points.
A lot less than used to be. 30-40% now, you know, there's a shift. I mean, you're seeing, you know, the stuff with Mike Rowe, and you're seeing the stuff that's going on with industry, and these guys, girls, they're realizing there's $50,000-$100,000 to be made in this industry. So some of them are now chasing that money. They're saying, okay, this is a viable industry. I don't have to go to 4 years of college. I mean, we're college here. We call it down the hill, but we're seeing a shift of a lot of students coming down here. And enrollment wise, we're probably higher than we ever been, which is totally shocking because we went through a little low there about 2 or 3 years ago. And now we're back up to a higher enrollment. But as far as loving cars, a lot less than it used to be. It used to be the student come in and you know, and they worked on cars their whole life with their mom and dad. And I mean, it's still the same way though. Unfortunately, you know, I heard Jack say, you know, the area and what he's in. And we started out the beginning of the program, Bill said, and it hasn't changed. I mean, most of these guys here and girls are rough. I mean, they're looking to find a craft, you know, and they're coming out of a bad situation. It's still the automotive group. It's still the automotive kids. And 80% of them are just fighting tooth and nail to get a job and find out something they can do without having to go to 4 years of college to do it. But not so much in love with cars, Carm, guys. I mean, you know, they're willing to turn wrenches and get it done.
If the enrollment is up, do you think that really matters, that you have to love it? I mean, like, I went to college with a lot of people that didn't love engineering, and they're probably perfectly capable engineers now. But I mean, I think you have to love it in order to be just excellent at it, or find yourself on a podcast talking to a bunch of other people that love it too. And that's my question to you, John. Do you think that's a necessary part of being a successful technician?
I don't. I really don't. Okay. Because I think they'll come in and like you said, we have to start at a younger age. I mean, you know, it was a great question. How are we going to get these kids into middle school? I mean, the old cliche of a career fair, but even you with your shops and you guys with your shop owners, if you get involved and they have a career fair, go set up a booth, but don't set up a booth and just sit there. Set up a booth with a demo and a wheel and an electric impact and put that in the kids' hands and have them take the wheel off and put it back on. You can get a little cutaway of a S10 demo with a wheel. And, you know, wow, that wasn't so bad. They're scared to death of that impact. But it's in the back of their head. And then they go visit that tech center. They go visit your shop. I mean, shop tours. They just don't know that. They don't understand, you know, what's going on out there and that they can do it. They still think it's, you know, we're covered head to toe with grease. And some days we are. But most of it today is just, you know, understanding where to find the information, the research, doing this stuff. But they'll fall in love with it when they start working on the cars and doing it. But a lot less are in love with cars when they come in. That's one of my first questions. What's your favorite car? And they're like, oh, whatever, the Hyundai I drive. I'm like, no, man. I mean, I'm talking about like a, you know, you got a Corvette, Camaro, something. What do you have? It's like, you know, I don't could care less. You know, this is a big money industry, right? And I'm like, well, we'll see in 6 months.
That's one of the things that I just started wanting to do was get into the high schools for a career fair. Because I learned yesterday that I think most parents believe that most technicians make about $30,000.
Yes.
So if I can show them my technicians are making six figures, then that makes it a much more viable future than what they ever thought it could be.
Right.
So while you don't have to have a passion for cars to do this job, you need to understand that there is money to be made if you can make it.
Can we teach the student and or our population what to love? And my point is, if there's an awful lot of high tech that we work on today, that thing that's on those four tires, or it's just a computer on wheels. I remember Patrick McHugh holds STEM classes for students and parents to come in. He hooks up the scanner and he moves the BMW's headlights and he shows all the high tech that's inside the cars, you know, the center stack and all the really cool stuff that goes on and for people's, you know, lights to come on. I mean, let's take a device that goes around and checks the laser tread or, you know, TPMS. The average student, middle school even, has no clue about, and even high school. So if there's a commitment that needs to be made in our industry, and I think it's kind of a broken record of many of us guys that podcast to our industry, is that to a point, maybe it's not career fair, but it's a career day. And we need to talk to the students. We need to talk to the teachers. We need to talk to the counselors. And I did an episode just a while back. I knocked on the door of a high school, and I went in and I filmed it. And I, even though I filmed students and we published it that weren't going in the automotive, we had a chance to see that there's some pretty smart kids. Like, they just don't know what they want. And our industry has an ugly black eye that we've got to, we collectively have to fix.
Yeah, they don't know what opportunity is there either.
Well, the opportunity, and to speak to the passion, let's just say that when I formed my passion, getting a car and customizing and working on that car was almost a must. You had a passion because it was yours. It was your freedom. It represented something totally different than it does to the generation we have now. Cars had personalities. There were pickup truck people. There were muscle car people. There were sedan people. There were cruiser people. That's what we grew up in. And we have a homogenization of computers on wheels right now that took the passion away. I've been in this industry for a long time, and the reason I survived in it is because I had to feed myself. So I've done everything from rebuilding automatic transmissions, 25 years of doing that because nobody else did it. I'll feed myself very, very well, and I can learn a lot by doing something else that nobody else does. In the future, we need to teach these kids that it is not necessarily going to be the brake and alignment bulwark that you're going to be doing. With the advent of ADOS and reprogramming and aiming headlights, there's a lot of what I would call clean work in a shop right now. In fact, the shop that I'm in, I don't wash, I dust. It is set up for diagnostics, for training, for filming. It's not a productive open to the public facility, but in order to have this, in order for me to come teach you guys what's new, I have to break stuff and work on broken stuff myself. So the passion part, the bringing them up, all of this has to be overlaid that we have to bring the younger people into our lives, not just our shops, and show them that you can achieve. I mean, I spend months out of the year traveling to very, very cool places to give these same automotive speeches to places people would go on vacation. If you embrace it, there is no limit to what automotive can give you. Do I still love cars? Honestly, not as much as I used to. But I love my career and I love giving back. And there have been people in my life, and I've had two of them that one is gone now, but I've had two mentors that just, they have been unreplaceable to what I've been able to do.
I mean, when you get finished with something, you know, and they accomplish that, that light bulb still lights. I think they fall in love with that process. I think they're seeing now, I am capable. They didn't think that for, you know, the first 18 years of life. Hey, here's something I can actually do. I can diagnose, man, that video joystick, that helped. I mean, you know, do you see that even in the NAPA with the training that the techs that you have, when they come in and you have scenarios and it's like, wow, okay, that's how it works. I mean, it really lights them up.
That's a perfect point, actually. We always try within the first few months of their apprenticeship to give them a job that they don't think they can do. Most people think we're crazy for giving it to them, you know, to see that excitement they get. So for example, just last week, one of our apprentices, pretty early into the program, he is going to the community college right now at the same time. We gave him a water pump on a Ford 3.5 liter where it's timing chains.
Wow. You know,
it's a 10-hour job. He was scared to death and he kept telling me, I don't think I'm ready to do this. And I said, well, you know, you start tearing it apart. When you have problems, you ask for questions. You know, we'll help you out through it. So read the service information a couple of times before you start. He didn't ask for help once. You know, I kept going over there, sticking my nose in it to make sure that we weren't going to have a problem. But that car went together. He was pretty close to book time on it. Didn't lose too much, actually, which I was expecting it to take a couple of days. And it fired right up. No leaks. You know, I go and QC these things and look at them. It was perfect. And I don't think you'll get a bigger confidence boost than when they do something like that and see that, wow, you know, a year ago, they wouldn't have even thought about starting on a job like that with help. And today he went through it all on his own.
Yeah, I think that's your answer, Bill. I mean, I think they probably more today will fall in love with the process than the car. I mean, you know, and it's crazy. I mean, I get to shoot 3 or 4 shows at SEMA every year, and everybody, it's the first thing they walk up to you. It's my favorite car. And I'm not a car guy either, believe it or not. I mean, Karen, we discussed this before. I mean, I drive an 06 Mercury Marquis because I don't have to work on it. Just, you know, what in the world is this guy doing? I mean, I'm in love with, like you said, the industry, the process, all that stuff. But, you know, I think the cars, falling in love with the cars, you're going to be more in love with the process.
Is anyone on here a car guy? I'm not either.
Hey,
what's your car, Sam?
I have 9.
Wow.
Everything from a few BMW M3s to Porsches to old Datsuns and Nissans to Land Cruisers. Just everything.
So he's a car guy. So you know what that feels like then.
Yeah, I mean, that's what drew me to the industry in the very beginning, is I wanted to work on race cars. Truth be told, I wanted to be a race car driver, but I didn't have any damn money. So it turned into, I want to go work on race cars. That passion never went away, even when I was building my other business.
I heard internships, I've heard apprenticing, and of course we have the students, John, at college, and they're going through a 2-year program, probably an AAS, right, John?
No, certificate, AAS, yeah, different options.
Do they do internships, John? And because what Jake is talking about is bringing on a young person at any stage in their life and putting them through a 2-year work study apprentice. I mean, they don't go anywhere. They come, show up every day. There is training, but of course it's either leader led or online, and it's all part of the course. Is there value, gentlemen, in taking an intern from John School or any other 2-year, you know, school around the country and making sure that you're helping them with more hands on so that they fall in love with the process, not the car?
I think so. You know, coming from the shop side, I would enjoy having someone who was interested in furthering their career. It gets some hands-on experience. It gets me an extra set of hands to get a car out. I know it drives Greg crazy sometimes, but I tell everybody to go make mistakes. It's how you learn. So, you know, I'm not going to jump down anybody's throat for making a mistake when they're trying to do something to be better. And if I had the opportunity to have the younger generation who wants to come up and be in this industry, I'd take it. I would take it.
So in your case, there aren't any colleges close by that could give you an intern. But John, do any of your students intern anywhere?
No, Florida, we're turning that corner right now. It's we're really, the governor's putting a big push towards that. We just been doing this for 27 years, and that's where we're handcuffed. I mean, we need the shop owners. We need you guys to come into the school and go to your legislation and say, listen, you know, 1,800 hours is way, way too long for an automotive program. I mean, these guys, I'm quite frankly sneaking out the door at 1,500, just doing kind of a working with you guys. But on-the-job training and that apprenticeship in Florida does not exist, and that's the problem. If I had them 900 hours and you had them for 1200, or you had them for another 300 hours, 9, 10, 11, 12, 1200 hours total, that would be so much better if we could work together like that. I don't know how the states are and how the legislation is worldwide, but I know in Florida, you know, we still have the bean counter. So they want that kid in the seat because of Pell Grants and funding and stuff like that. So that's the barrier we're trying to break right now. And I think if we can break that barrier, it would be much better for you guys as shop owners to take these guys in and just, you know, back in my day, it was ASAP program and we would go 6 weeks to school and 6 weeks at the thing. And that's how they kind of got away with that. But it even needs to be more as a partnership. So, you know, if we had them 3 hours a day and they work with you 3 hours a day and we just took those 3 hours and put it towards their curriculum, 100% better you would get. You would get exactly what you want. And like Bill said, go back and say, here's what we had, here's what we need, here's what we're working on, here's the new technology out there. You know, could you at least inform them on that? How to use a lift, now to chop his finger off, how to do this stuff to get into the shop. Yeah, we need that. We don't have it, Carmen. I don't think the whole industry has it. That school legislation needs to be cracked. And the only way it's going to be cracked is with the power of industry saying, we need these kids out here in conjunction with school time.
The point is that if you can take some of these great ideas away and stop saying, oh, woe is me, there's nothing I can do, and hide behind not being, you know, proactive in this whole discussion of, you know, how should we prepare for the future? There's so many other things that we can talk about. We need to talk about EVs here in a sec. And what is all that changing tech and what's our shops going to look like in the future? But as we realize that our biggest problem is people's, the ones that actually put the wrenches and do the diagnostics, you cannot sit behind and keep making excuses. And there's nothing like getting together with a group of people in your local area and walking in to a high school or walking in to a college and say, hi, it's like a hi, I'm from the government, I'm here to help, right? But really, really mean it.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of tie-in there that hasn't taken place. But to John's point about the training, that there isn't the hands-on, well, the apprenticeships, or at least what we're running, has the exact opposite problem, that we have a requirement to be federally accredited for how much training has to take place. And it's low. It's just shy of 300 hours over the 2-year program. But, you know, as a shop, I don't feel like we do the best job of supplying that type of training. You know, it's some online training where they're sitting at a computer at home, not paying attention, probably don't care too much for it. It gets dated. A lot of different, a mixture of things. We try our best, but man, I wish we could get in with the tech schools and build some sort of apprenticeship program where the online or the curriculum, the training is handled by them. The in-shop is handled by us, and let's put something together to make sure that, hey, they're going to start with the shop safety. They're going to teach them the hoist usage and all that. And then we're going to get them in the shop and we're going to start with oil changes and things, you know, but they need to be on the same page. Unfortunately, you know, when we have people that are in a tech program and working here during the day, they're learning how to rebuild an automatic transmission, something we never do in the shop here.
Right.
And then, you know, the next day they're learning how to rebuild brake calipers. Again, we haven't done that in years, and it doesn't correlate directly. And I wish there was some sort of correlation to what they're learning versus what they're doing every day.
You know, think about the Ford Asset Program, and it's out there. It's what's called a corporate program inside of education. Who says that, Jake, you and a bunch of other independents couldn't have a corporate-style program where the student may go for theory to the college? And again, John, as you were saying, we would split the time. And Jake, you and your independent group have literally the Utah Independent Corporate Program going on with the local college, which means, you know, you could have a dozen students. I mean, yeah, I know you have to have facility and it has to work. But here in town, the dealerships are setting up their own, not Ford and not Chrysler, the dealerships are setting up their own corporate program in concert with the 2-year school. So that's something I think we need to think through.
Definitely. I know like I said, we've recently made a really good relationship with our local school, and that has brought a lot to us. But before that, every one of these students was going straight into an OE. You know, they were going to Ford, they were going to Chrysler, whoever. And if you go to the school, you'll see why. I mean, there's signage everywhere. They have people coming in and telling them what opportunities are available. They're showing them these big clean shops that they're going to work at. There's no representation for the aftermarket there. And we have to be the ones to come in there and say, look, there's another option here, and we would love to help you get into it.
And guys, there's an ugly churn rate that happens with these young students that go there. And if the dealership doesn't provide them the right career path, they're gone in a couple of years.
Bring some subs. The kids love the subs. Hey, these guys come in, they local little tire shops and stuff, and they'll bring them lunch. And believe it or not, they'll remember that. And when it's time for them to go out there, they'll go right there. If you treated them like that, it doesn't take much, man. A pat on the shoulder, a hug, just whatever. Just bring them some food, and they'll like, wow. If that's what it takes, believe it or not, we've had 6 or 7 guys go apply at that tire shop just because they brought them lunch one day. Crazy, absolutely crazy, but.
You're so right. You're so right. Changing technology, guys, and the EVs that are coming. Could we spend a few minutes on that? Your perspectives?
I'm trying to get Greg to get a Tesla loaner so we can tear one apart and put it back together. Come to find out that as they start to age, they have axle seals. They have a style of differential fluid. They have brakes that need to be serviced annually. They have things that need to be done. Even though I may not get into the battery or engine side of it, there's still lots of things that could fail that I can do. I know that there's a Tesla body shop certification, which will allow you to buy Tesla parts. So we're going through that right now so we can buy Tesla components and be able to work on these things. It's going to be a challenge as time goes on, but I feel like we have to be in front of it because I feel like electric is here to stay.
I would concur with that. It's here to stay. The current administration, with all the money that's been floated around, it's definitely going to happen. Everybody going back to Tesla for electric cars. I mean, they did. That is an incredible company. And what he's done is really taught a lot of lessons and probably created a false hope environment for a lot of startup companies thinking that it's a lot easier than it actually is. The one thing I'll say, and you touched upon it probably the best there, Jack, is the problems that you fix on electric cars are car problems. They're going to be wheel bearings, tires, alignments, ball joints. They're going to be stabilizers. It's the stuff that we've been working on. Now we're going to have to change our equipment and gear up a little bit for it. But by and large, I started working on hybrids and I'm up around the Cleveland area. So it's not like we have a really dense pocket of them. But at one time, you'll start looking up and on your lifts, you'll see that predominantly there's hybrids in your shop. And I go back over the years that we have done this and maybe a couple inverters and a couple batteries. But by and large, it's like, oh, something got sucked into the mass airflow sensor, shut the hybrid system off. Wasn't even a hybrid problem. So when it comes to electricity, electric cars and all the advancement, the technology, the networking, the braking systems, the ADOS, that's the biggest thing coming up. I think that's where we're going to go. Now, are we going to have to re-educate ourselves, the three-phase electricity, electrical motors and all that? Absolutely. But the bulk of our work, I believe, is still going to be car problems that we've dealt with forever. The cooling loops on these cars. If you start looking at some of the stuff, not just what we have today, but what's right around the corner, we are going to start using heat pumps to take heat from the electronics, put it into a refrigerant, drop that refrigerant's pressure, and then drop its temperature and use that to cool the battery back down. So the tech that we work on is going to remain the same. And with skateboard platforms, you guys have all seen this. I really don't see a lot of typical shops replacing or doing battery work like we did in an early Prius or something. But by and large, even my company at Napa, we have a lot of Tesla parts that are available right now, whether it's looking for ball joints or tie rod ends. There is stuff that they source from other manufacturers that we were able to do also.
It seems like every few years there's this new technology in the automotive industry that we're scared to death of. You know, all the older guys are going to retire. We can't figure out how to work on this fuel injection. Just bring back carburetors. You know, when I started getting into the industry, it was the switch to OBD2. And I remember hearing them all tell me how dumb it was. And we were going to have to buy these expensive scan tools. And the stupid car was going to tell us what was wrong with it. And, you know, I would never want to go back. I want that technology that we have now. You know, recently it's been ADAS. And I think that's kind of calmed down a little as more people have realized that we can do it. We'll be fine. Electric hybrid. Maybe that's the current one that we're all afraid of. But, you know, to both of their points, these are cars. They still have the same problems. They still have the same issues. You know, one of the points I like to make to some of the techs that tell me all the maintenance is gone is, you know, your average gasoline engine vehicle probably has less than 10 coolant hoses on it. Look under the hood of one of these electric cars. I mean, you're talking 30 plus coolant hoses with plastic elbows on them. You think those things aren't going to be breaking? We have two to three cooling systems that we have to do flushes on. They still have brakes that aren't getting actuated as often, so they're going to require more service on that end. There is tons of service to be done on these and repair. It's just different. This thing's changing, and we have to be ready for the changes and willing to accept it and get the training and the information needed so that we can be the ones to do that.
Every evolution of technology has always had the naysayers. I love your story, Jake, about the ADAS. You were talking to somebody about static and dynamic. Can you tell that real quick?
Yeah, just one of the points I wanted to make was just that I think so many of us, and myself included, a lot of us in this industry, you've heard something or you believe something, or maybe it was true at one time, and you never look into it anymore. You just assume that's the way it is forever. You know, there's a repair that you can't do because a special tool is required or something. And my biggest point for us moving to the future is that you've got to keep up on this technology. You got to keep looking. Don't assume that something is true that you've heard or know. You know, I thought recently that ADAS probably wasn't something that I was going to get too deep into. We weren't going to worry about getting targets and a dedicated system. You know, we have OE tooling, and I thought we'll do just the static calibrations. And I had been told that the movement was going to be towards more dynamic calibrations, is what I meant to say, sorry, where you drive the vehicle to calibrate it. And I was put in touch with somebody that's an expert on this stuff. He's an engineer and one of the manufacturers of ADAS equipment. And his point was that that's not what's going to happen. I keep hearing that, but he's saying, no, will most likely be moving towards static calibrations where you will need the targets and systems. And the reason being that if you think about it, every car coming off the assembly line has to be calibrated. And do you think that, you know, Ford, Toyota, whoever has somebody driving these cars around to calibrate them? No, they're calibrating them on the assembly line with a static calibration. Also, if we're having our technicians drive them around uncalibrated, there's safety issues and liability issues that we're facing there. The other big concern is weather. You know, there's places where there's snow on the ground the majority of the year, and those calibrations can't take place. So we have to do a static calibration. Point being, though, that, you know, I was under the impression that's the direction it was going. There was no need to look into this. And I've done a complete 180. We just recently had a bunch of equipment ordered and came in. We've been doing some training on it, and we're getting ready to go that direction. It's nothing difficult. It's nothing we can't learn. But there was just a change of perception there once you have more information, or the information changes.
The process has changed a lot, too. To speak to Carm, you talked about our Easter snowstorm. I actually had a Ford that had brought in and needed a radar sensor put into it. And Ford is a dynamic calibration. You put a level on the front of the sensor before you put the bumper back on. You make sure it's level as far as one plane. And then you put it into a drive mode, and you have to drive it. And it's looking for mailboxes and hard items on the side of the road to calibrate the right and left portion of it, as we'll say. But I had to call the customer and tell them it'll be 3 days because we're in the middle of a snowstorm. And first of all, it's a freshly painted vehicle. I do not want it out there. They had just done all the work on the front of it. Second of all, we're forced to do that dynamic calibration, but now I have to find a road test road to do it on. If you're in the inner city, if you're in Honolulu or Houston, Texas, good luck getting that to actually work downtown and getting that to calibrate. So the static is coming on. And I think your whole point of going there was the amount of space that's going to be required that you're going to have to dedicate. In my place, I have the three diagnostic flat bays, and now it doubles because you can get everything out of there. You still have that flat area. It's clean. It's pristine. It's going to be a growing problem. You know, when we wrote our talking points down, one thing I said, and you touched on it, was the evolution of everything that's going to end our industry. And we've all managed to keep up with it over time. This is just the next evolution. And when I think from either a shop owner's or even my perspective of buying equipment, it's like, well, when did I have to start paying for that service? We'll go to 1234YF. The past 3 years is when my people in my area started buying those machines, because it got to the point where, you know, I've written 5 checks at a body shop down the street who actually did buy the machine early. And now it's getting to the point where I have enough work to do it. So the part that I've learned over time is we have been taught these lessons over and over and over again with ABS, with, you know, fuel injection cleaning machines, with everything that we kind of like, well, I'm not sure if I need that yet. And then sooner or later, you're 6 months in and realize you ordered it 6 months too late because you needed it before you actually made the commitment. So I like to look back in history of the things that I have stumbled on before, things that I should have bought earlier, and see if I can apply that lesson to what we see now.
We did a show last week, and it was about having kind of a, if you will, a rainy day. What happens if business slows down? And one of the comments was a two-word comment that came out, and it floored me. I loved it so much. Stop stopping. Just let that sink in for a minute. Stop stopping. The decision to get, you know, 1, 2, 3, YF, the decision not to do ADAS, the decision not to do this, you know, okay, stop. And then by the time you realize it, like you said, Bill, it's passed you by. Here comes ABS, here comes, you know, fuel injection, here comes TBI. Remember TBI? We weren't going to be busy anymore, right? It's always proven itself to the contrary. We always adapted. Nature found a way. Entrepreneurs find a way. Consumers find a way. Great business people with good cultures and good teams find a way. They rally the troops. And that's how we should prepare for the future. Keep a very open mind. But thank you so much, Sam Craven, shop owner, the Garage Eastie in Houston, Texas, loves cars.
Don't hold it against me.
No, I won't. I'm envious of you. In fact, I should have never sold that 83 Camaro Berlinetta that I had many years ago.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I know. Jake Sorensen, 2019 Napa ASE Technician of the Year from McNeil's Auto Care, Sandy, Utah. Bill Weaver, Napa trainer, 30 years in business, 11 as a Napa trainer. Jack Curran, General Manager, COO, GNC Tire, Chantilly in Manassas, Virginia. And John Gardner, automotive instructor from Chipola College in Marianna, Florida. And, of course, host of Tech Garage on Discovery's Motor Trend Channel. Guys, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carm.
Thank you.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.